So if you take a look on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and you count down four lines from the top, you'll see the two dots. And I mentioned to you already many times that whenever you see the two dots, you know you're starting something new. Mm-hmm. And the Gemara is going to begin by copying word for word either the Mishnah or a Braisa that we had earlier. In this case, the Gemara is copying over the Mishnah, and specifically the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah. And the issue at stake here, which is a three-way debate in our Mishnah, is when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis? So we know the earliest time is Seita Kochavim, after the stars come out. We had a long discussion about that last week. Now, what's the latest time? And there are going to be three opinions. Each one is going to give us a little more slack, you know, a little bit more time to finish up Kriyat Shema. The first opinion, which is the most severe, the most strict, is going to be Rabbi Eliezer. And he holds Ad Sof HaAshmora. So we're going to try to figure out what Ad Sof HaAshmora means. And then we have the second opinion, just to mention, that's the opinion of the Chachamim. They say Ad Chatzot, until midnight. And then we have the third opinion, Rabbi Gamliel, he gives you the most amount of time, until daybreak. Now, we're going to focus today on Rabbi Eliezer, the first of the three opinions. And he says, Ad Sof HaAshmura, and then we won't see it here on your page, but in the Mishnah, HaRishona. Now, what does this mean, HaShmura, HaRishona? That's going to be a gigantic debate that we're about to embark upon. Now, the night is divided up into segments. Each segment is called an Ashmura. Now, sometimes the word Ashmura is shortened, it's abbreviated, and it's called a Mishmar. A Mishmar, I'll give you an example of a Mishmar. If you're a soldier in the army, then they give you a Mishmar. A Mishmar literally translates as a watch, not a watch that you wear on your hand. But a watch, that means you're in charge of watching. You're on duty. In other words, your service is specified at a certain time interval. And that time interval is called a mishmar. In a longer form, it's called an ashmora. And the night is divided up to various ashmoros. The question is, as we'll soon see, how many segments is the night divided up into? And the two options are 3 or 4. So let's assume the night is 12 hours long on a perfect night. That means it's not winter and it's not summer. You know, in the summer the night is shorter and the daylight is longer. In the winter it's just the opposite. The night is longer and the daylight is shorter. But on a perfect day, let's say somewhere between winter and summer, you would divide up the 24-hour period of the day into two halves, into two 12-hour periods, and the nighttime is 12 hours. So now we have to divide up the night into its various segments. That's called Ashmura. And Rabbi Eliezer says the latest time for Kriyat Shema is the end of the first Ashmura. So what does that mean? Does it mean at the end of the third hour of the night or the end of the fourth hour of the night? It depends. If we're going to divide up the night into four parts, then when is the end of the first Ashmora? At the end of the third hour. If we're going to divide up the night into three parts, then when is the last time for the Ashmora? The fourth hour. So that's what the Gemara is going to analyze now. When we take the night and we divide it into Ashmoros, right, Ashmura is the singular, Ashmoros is the plural. We're talking about the fact that in each one of these segments, there are beings, I'll use that word, who are on watch. They're on duty. They're on call.
These aren't the Kohanim?
No, these are not the Kohanim. These are the Malachim, the angels in heaven. Now, the primary job of the angels in heaven is to sing a song of praise in front of God. And the night is divided up into segments, and the malachim, the angels, are divided up into groups. Each group is assigned a different mishmeres, or mishmar, meaning a watch. And they have to sing their song of praise in front of God at that watch, during that period of time. That is their service. Just like a soldier, he surrounds the base, you know, with a gun to make sure that nobody infiltrates into the base. That's his service. The malachim, the angels up in Shamayim, they also have a watch. They also have a service. And their service consists of serving God by singing his song.
Did this have correspondence to the Beis HaMikdash?
Yes, okay. This is all about the Beis HaMikdash, meaning...
It's Derech Nistar.
Yeah, I guess this is certainly that part of the Torah which is Nistar, which is concealed. But we're getting a little bit of a glimpse into it, you know, some little revelation. So the Gemara now wants to ask the following question. Rabbi Eliezer is a little bit confusing to us because he doesn't really tell us exactly on the clock when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema. Instead, in a sort of ambiguous way, he says it's at the end, the conclusion of the first Ashmorah. Well, why didn't he just tell me what hour of the night that is? So the Gemara says, my kasavar, what does he hold?
Where are we?
We are three lines down from the top. Four lines down from the top. Gav Gimel Amud Aleph. You see the two dots on the fourth line down from the top? It says that Sofa Shmora. That's a quote from the Mishnah. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And the Gemara asks, my kasavar. You know, if you have the Frank's Dictionary that I told you about, the Talmudic Dictionary, I gave a copy to Sam. This is a classic. You know, you can find this all over Shas. If you did a word search, my kasavar, it would appear endless amount of times in the Gemara. My means what? Kasavar, does he hold? Now, the word kasavar is an Aramaic conjugation of a Hebrew word in Lashon Kodesh. The root of the word is samach beis reish, savar. But when you conjugate it in Aramaic, it becomes kasavar. Now, in modern Hebrew, you could say ma sover, what does he think? A svara, which is the noun, is a logical idea. Sover means a verb where he maintains that idea. He thinks that idea, and he believes in that idea. That's called sover. So, my kasavar. What is the view, what is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer? And the Gemara now analyzes two possibilities. E, which means if, kasavar he holds shalosh mishmaros havi alayla. The night is divided up into three parts. Lema, why doesn't he say, lema means lomar, so the Hebrew word is lomar and the Aramaic is lema. Let him say, ad arba shaos. We take the 12 hours of night, divide them up into three mishmaros, three watches as we call them, and we end up with the conclusion of the first third at the end of the fourth hour. Why did Rabbi Eliezer formulate such an ambiguous phrase and state ad sofa shmura rishona? Why didn't he just say explicitly until the end of the fourth hour? Ve'ika sovar. But if he's of the opinion, which is going to be the opinion of Rebbe, we'll see it later, arba mishmara savi alayla, you divide up the night into how many parts?
Four
parts. If we divide the night into four parts, lema, why doesn't he just tell us ad shalosh shos until the end of the third hour, which is the end of the first mishmeres? So basically, what Rabbi Eliezer left us with is a certain ambiguity about when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema. Is it at the end of the fourth hour because we're going to divide up the night into three parts? Or is it at the end of the third hour because we're going to divide up the night into four parts? In other words, we really, at this point, we're in the dark. We don't know what Rabbi Eliezer had in mind. He was particularly ambiguous. And the reason for that, we don't know. Now, what's the next word in your Gemara?
After Arba Shaot?
Ad Shalosh Shaot. Le'olam. You have the word Le'olam? Okay. Le'olam is a word that gives you an answer to a previous question. In other words, I'm just trying to teach you the methodology of the Shas. When the Shas has a suffix, meaning a doubt, and it vacillates back and forth, two interpretations are possible, then in the next line, the Shas is going to move forward. Let's make a plunge forward. Le'olam. Le'olam means always, or I will always tell you. And that's going to choose one of the two possibilities. Kasavar, Rabbi Eliezer holds, Shalosh Mishmaros Havyalai. The night is divided into three parts. So when would what hour would be the end of the first Mishmeres? If the night is divided up into three parts, the end of the fourth hour. And the Gemara later on, as we'll soon see, is going to prove that in fact Rabbi Eliezer, not now in Mishnah, but in a Braisa, commits himself to the position that the night is divided into three parts.
That's what the Gemara gets its ruling, that its conclusion from?
Yeah, because Le'olam is going to end up with Desanya, which you'll see approximately four lines later in the Gemara.
Yeah.
So this is part of this is like an introduction to you take a deep breath, and it's a few lines. And then we're going to get to Desanya. Desanya means because, it says in a Braisa. And that Braisa is going to prove and establish conclusively that Rabbi Eliezer maintains the position that the night is divided up into three sections, three watches. So now the question is, again, as we said before, so why didn't he just say that the latest time for Kriyat Shema is at the end of the fourth hour? And the answer is going to be, and we've seen this methodology before, that he wants to kill two birds with one stone. Meaning, by the by, he wants to teach us something else. Had he said explicitly, he would have taught us the answer he would offer to one question. But he wants to offer an answer to another question as well. Now, just to refresh your memory, I'm not sure, Aaron and Colin, if you were here when we discussed this, the Mishnah says that the earliest time for Kriyat Shema is when the Kohanim come to eat their truma. Why didn't the Mishnah just simply say the earliest time for Kriyat Shema is Tzeitan Kochavim, when the stars come out? So the Gemara uses that logic that we wanted to teach you another thing, something about the Kohanim, and when is the earliest time they can eat truma. They don't have to wait until the next morning when they bring their kapara, their karbon, but they have already a purification process which reaches this part of the process reaches culmination at night with the stars, that they can already eat truma, even though their full-fledged purification will have to wait until the next morning when they bring the karbon. But nevertheless, at night, they already have achieved that level of purification that allows them to eat truma. So that was, again, a case where I call it the kill two birds with one stone theory. So by using an ambiguous phrase, instead of saying something directly, it teaches you two things simultaneously. Number one, when is the earliest time for Kriyat Shema? And number two, when is the earliest time for the Kohen to eat truma? So we're going to see now a very similar kind of structure. How are you, Sam? Can anyone give Sam a Gemara to look on, maybe? Oh, we have one. Excellent. Okay, then. How was your chag in Machon Meir?
It was great.
Okay, excellent. I'm glad. I mean, it was our loss, but their gain, because we had hoped that you would come
so
to us.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
I really wish.
I'll take it up with your friend when I meet her. Anyway, I'm just kidding. So now we say, Now, who could read the next four words in the Gemara? So I know we're all in the same place.
V'ha kamashmal.
Excellent. V'ha kamashmal. That's what I wanted to say. V'ha and this ka hi mashma teaches law on us, and this which is going to follow is what Rabbi Eliezer wants to teach us. In other words, instead of telling us and letting the cat out of the bag that the latest time for Kriyat Shema is the end of the fourth hour, he wants to teach us something else. And what is that? De'ika, there are mishmaros, there are these groups of servicemen, in this case service angels, barakia, up in the heavens. Ve'ika, and there are also mishmaros, there are groups who are on service, on duty, bi'ara. Ara means on the land. Ara is an Aramaic word for on the land. So again, what's going on here is a kind of a mirror image between the mishmaros up in the heavens, that's called Rakia. If you remember the verse at the beginning of the Torah, it says that God created the Rakia.
It's the firmament.
Firmament, okay. And there's a mirror image down here on earth of mishmaros. So up in the Rakia there are mishmaros, right? We said these are groups of malachim, of angels that serve by singing songs of praise to God. And down here on earth there are also people who are in charge. They have their duty. They have their watch.
So basically when it uses the word mishmaros here, it's implying the songs, because it just would usually be like the watches, right?
Right. Again, the song is just what they do. You know, in other words, I was answering the question, they're on duty. What are they? How do they achieve? You know, the King of Kings wants to hear their service. So what is their service? So I mentioned the song.
But it's making an implication that the watches of the Rakia are actually these angelic sort of songs, right?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by the watches of the Rakia. I would formulate it slightly different. The watches in the Rakia. What do you say, Aaron?
Like, it's probably not so important what they're actually doing as part of their watch. I think.
Right. Okay. I'm just mentioning in passing because it might come up later.
They're
busy with. Rashi makes a big deal about it here. They're busy singing songs of praises, and every mishmeres, every watch has its own group of angels at its own set time and its own song. There are different songs of praise. Okay, but what Rabbi Eliezer wants to tell us here is that there's a parallel. Just like up in the heavens, up in the Rakia, there are three mishmaros, groups of malachim, of angels. So too, down on earth, there are three mishmaros. And they're exactly parallel in terms of their time spans to the three mishmaros up in Shamayim of the malachim. And we're going to soon see that if we know what goes on up in Shamayim, then we're going to be able to tell exactly which mishmeres we're up to down here on earth. Do you follow what's going on here? Now let me just write one word on the board here, if I can find a. I'll see if I can use this one. Do you like blue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll use blue. The word is siman. 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 This is the key word for what we're about to learn. In other words, if you want to know when exactly is the end of one mishmeres and the beginning of the next, you know, what we call changing of the guards, when is the baton passed on from one group to the other, we need a siman. A siman means some sort of a physical alarm, so to speak, a sound or a movement that goes on to teach us about this transitional moment of time. Now, in the case of the beginning of the night, I don't need a siman. Why not?
You're dark.
Because of the night, I look in the sky and I look for three stars. That's called Tzeita Kochavim. Once I have Tzeita Kochavim, I know that the first mishmeres has begun, night has the inception of night. By the same token, at the end of the night, I have daybreak. And then also I can see what's called Alot HaShachar, you know, the rising of the morning star. But in between, when I want to make the transition from Mishmeres number 1 to Mishmeres number 2, and from Mishmeres number 2 to Mishmeres number 3, I don't have some obvious astronomical phenomenon that would teach me when are we making this transition. So what I need is a simon. And that's what we're about to embark upon. We're going to study now a brisa in which we see that Rabbi Eliezer is committed to the position of dividing the night into three segments, of three equal segments, 4 hours, 4 hours, and 4 hours. And now he's going to tell us, how do we know when is the transition between Mishmeres number 1, Mishmeres number 2, and Mishmeres number 3? Now you might ask, why do I have to know about that transition? After all, this is relevant to the angels in heaven. I mean, last time I checked, I'm not an angel in heaven, so why do I have to know this? So the answer is because, as we said before, there's a mirror image, that just like up in Shamayim, up in the heavens, there's this change of the guard, so too, in a very parallel way, there's going to be a change of the guard at night, and we're going to have three different groups who are watching throughout the night. And that's what we want to learn about now. This Tanya, the Dalid is added to the word Tanya. Tanya means a brisa, and did Tanya means we learnt in a brisa. Did Tanya, I will prove it to you from a brisa. So let's now learn the brisa. This brisa is meant to give us a broader understanding of Rabbi Eliezer than the Mishnah. The Mishnah is very abridged. All it says about Rabbi Eliezer is that the latest time for Kriyat Shema Shal Arvis is the end of the first Mishmeres. That didn't really tell us much. In fact, we had doubts as to what he meant by the end of the first Mishmeres. Did he mean that the night is divided up to three parts and it's the end of the fourth hour? The night is divided up into four parts and it's the end of the third hour? What did he have in mind? This Sanya we learned in a Brisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. This is the same Rabbi Eliezer that we found in our Brisa, in our Mishnah. And he says the following: Shalosh Mishmaros Havi Halayla. The night, Laila, is divided up into three Mishmaros. Havi means it is. So the three Mishmaros are the night, meaning the night is divided up into three Mishmaros. So again, what point would be the end of the first Mishmaros? Everybody again? At the end of the fourth hour. Very good. Now he says the following: I'll call Mishmar u Mishmar, which means that during each one of these three segments of the night, each watch, Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Almighty God is sitting, Vishoeg Ka'ari, and he's roaring like a lion. How do we know such a thing? I mean, this belongs to, as you said before, Zach, you know, Torah HaNistar, you know, the secret parts of the Torah. So we'll get a glimpse of this from a verse in Jeremiah, in Yirmiah. And Yirmiah, in the 25th chapter, when he foretells or prophesizes the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Yirmiah was the prophet that lived at the time of the destruction of the first temple, and he already had prophesied in advance that the temple would be destroyed. And he says that what's going to happen up in the heavens after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, he says, Hashem Mimarom, Mimarom means up in the high heavens, Marom is high up.
Like from on high, literally, right?
Yeah, Marom, Rome. Rome means high. Mi Marom, from this place on high. God Yish'ag. Yish'ag is the conjugated verb of Sha'aga. Sha'aga is a roar. Yish'ag, he will roar. Umi Ma'on Kodsho, and from the abode of his holiness, Yitain Kolo, he will let his voice cry. And then it says, what is he crying about? Sha'og Yish'ag al Navehu. He's crying about his abode, his beautiful castle or palace that has been destroyed. So it means that up in the heavens, Almighty God is letting out a roar. And this is typical of mourning. When I say mourning, please keep in mind, I don't mean M-O-R-N. I mean M-O-U-R-N, otherwise known as grief. In Hebrew, does anybody know the word for grief or mourning?
Avelut.
Say it again?
Avelut.
Excellent. Avelut. So we think of Avelut in human terms, that a human being is an Avel. He is lamenting, he is grieving. Here what we're seeing is that Almighty God is grieving. We are attributing to God certain human qualities or characteristics, as if to say God himself is an Avel. He himself is reciting Kaddish, so to speak, for the loss of his abode, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And this shows, this really demonstrates to what extent Almighty God relates to us. You know, he identifies with the Jewish people. And in fact, some of the commentaries say that the Shagah is a way of waking us up. And God up in Shemayim is trying to give us a blast, you know, a shofar call. You know, it's time to wake up from your slumber and realize that you brought about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and you should be overwhelmed with a fear. You know, when the lion is the king of the jungle, right? The king of all the animals. And when the lion lets out a roar, the animals run away. You know, they're overwhelmed with fear. So God sends out this awe-inspiring or fear-inspiring roar, and he does this with regard to each one of the three mishmaros. Now, of course, the question we have to ask is, why does God have to let out this roar not once, not twice, but three times over the course of the night? Okay, that's a question that we have to address. But in any event, these three roars are each related to or connected with one of the three segments of the night, which is called one of the three mishmaros. And now the Brisa of Rabbi Eliezer is going to address the following question: how do I know when is the end of one mishmeres and the beginning of the next mishmeres? Because again, it's pitch black outside, so we can't really divide up the night any further. V'siman, that was the word I wrote on the board before. V'siman l'davar, the sign for this transition, this thing in which we can differentiate between one mishmeres and the other, is the following. Now again, where are these signs going to be? Up in heaven? No, they're going to be down on earth. Because you remember, there's a mirror image, a parallel, that down on earth we also divide up the night into three watches. Now up in Shemayim, up in the heavens, they know, the Malachim know exactly when is the end of one Mishmeres and the beginning of the other. Possibly because God lets out a roar at the end of each one of the Mishmarot. Possibly. By the way, how many times does the word Shin Aleph Gimel Sha'ag, which means roar, appear in the verse in Yirmiyah? Can you count it?
Three times.
Excellent. Hashem Yimaron Yish'ag, number one. And then it says Sha'og a second time. And then it says Yish'ag a third time. These are the three Sha'agot nightly, every night, that come from the Almighty, in which he is letting out a sign or an emotional, a cry, lamenting and woeing over and grieving over the loss of his bayit, of his home.
They're each in different tenses, right? Basically, like one is, I'm assuming one is, I don't exactly know the context. I know one's future.
Yish'ag is certainly in the future tense. Yish'ag.
Remember Yish'ag in one of them is
Shem. No, one has a vav in the middle. So what is
right, Sha'og, that's the second one. So the first one is definitely in the future, the future tense. And Sha'og is also probably in the future tense. Yish'ag Sha'og. Or maybe Sha'og is really in the present tense. Sha'og means he is roaring. And Yish'ag, he will roar. That goes back to the parallel of the first one.
Yeah, are any of them in the past tense? I guess not.
I don't think so. Sha'ag would be in the past tense.
Sha'ag would be in the past?
Right, Sha'ag.
The only reason I was thinking about that is because Hashem's name is that same configuration, like Hayah Hoveh Hiyeh. Right, I was thinking that maybe there's like a parallelism there. I don't know.
You're going to have a hard time to do it because Hayah probably is in the past tense. I don't see. Right. Okay, so let's. Again, fellas, if I can get by this Gemara, I'll be very happy. So, you know, when you ask me about other things beyond, I don't know if I have the, you know, the mental capacity to do that. You know, it's after Shavuot, so you got to go easy on me. Okay. V'siman l'davar. So how do you know the point of transition? Mishmara rishona chamor noer. During the first third of the night, the chamor is, I think, a donkey. Noer, I think the sound that a donkey makes is called neighing, maybe. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that.
Braying,
okay, excellent. Braying, okay, that's better than neighing. Okay. Hashnia, now we get to the second third of the night. Klavim tzoakim, the dogs are screaming. That's what we call barking. And shlishit, when we get to the third third of the night, here we have a very complex simon. Tinok yonek mishtei imo. This is pure Hebrew, by the way. There's no Aramaic here. It's very interesting to me that this brisa, in a sense, parallels a Mishnah, just like the Mishnah is written in what language?
Hebrew.
In Hebrew, in the holy language. So too this brisa, which is also authored by a Tana, in this case Rabbi Elazar, is also written in Hebrew. And the Hebrew is tinok, is a baby, right? Yonek is what? To breastfeed, mishtei imo, from the breasts of his mother. So this is the time that the child wakes up his mom and said, you know, I'm hungry. Ve'isha misaperet im ba'ala. And this is when a woman will speak to her husband. I think what this is about is what we call intimacy. You don't want to wait till daylight because then you lose a certain privacy and you end up very involved in the daily work and all the responsibilities. You don't want to do it at the beginning of the night because you're exhausted, but towards the end of the night, somewhere in that third of the night, and we'll have to see if this is the beginning of the third, or the end of the third, at that point, a woman will sort of coo into the ears of her husband, sort of a romantic kind of relationship. All of these are symbolic, as we'll see, of the secrets of the Torah, as we would say. So now the Gemara takes over. Now, how do I know the Gemara takes over? Because, as we pointed out, it was striking that the Brisa was written in Hebrew, in Lashon Kodesh. At this point, we shift back into the Aramaic. The word Mai is in Aramaic, and it means what is. Mai ka choshev, what is he considering? In other words, when he goes through these set periods of time with the simonim, what is he talking about? Mai ka choshev Rabbi Eliezer. What is Rabbi Eliezer exactly calculating with these simonim? Are these simonim going to indicate the beginning of the Ashmores or the end of the Mashmores? E tchilas Mishmores ka choshev. If he's referring to the beginning of the Mishmaros. So let's say, if you go with this premise, when does the first Mishmeres, the first third of the night, begin? Everybody? No. I'm saying in the Braita. You're an Ibn Chacham. You're already smarter than I am. Right now, I just want to know in the Braita, how do I know when the first segment of the night begins? What do I hear?
A donkey
braying, that was the word we used. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sam,
yeah.
Braying.
Yeah, braying.
How do you spell that?
B-R-A-Y,
okay.
Yeah.
So the Gemara says that makes no sense. It can't be that what Rabbi Eliezer meant to say was that the kickoff of the first of the three segments is the donkey that's braying, because Tchilas Mishmara Rishona Siman Alamali. The beginning of the first Mishmara. Why lamali? Why do I need lamali? Okay, that you have to write down in your lexicon. You know, lamali, why do I need simana? Why do I need a simon? We know exactly when night begins. Artahu, night begins. It is night because we have tzeit hakochavim. But now we're in trouble. Because the other option is Isof Mishmarot Kochashiv. So from Tzeta Kochavim until the donkey starts braying is going to be a 4-hour period. I'm going to realize and I'm going to note that transition, the end of the third of the first Mishmeres, when I hear the Chamor, the donkey braying. Well, now I'm in trouble. Why? Because then the second Simon, which was the dogs. Barking would be the end of the second Mishmeres, correct? And then the Tinok Yonek Mishtei Imo would be the baby is breastfeeding at the end of the third Mishmeres. So now I have the same question in the reverse. Sof Mishmar Achrona Lomali Simana. What do you think the Gemara is asking now? Sof Mishmar Achrona Lomali Simana.
Why do we need a sign for the end?
Yimamahu, we don't need a sign for the end. Because it's daybreak, so all we have to do is see the morning star rise or whatever it is. We'll go through the different opinions about when daybreak is, but whatever it is, it's astronomical. Meaning, there's an astronomical phenomenon here, with which we identify the morning, the day, and I don't need a simon for that. So now the Gemara is going to come up with a brilliant new understanding of Rabbi Eliezer's brisa. Of Simonim. Ella says, well, rather, Ella usually introduces the final conclusion. Ella, Chashiv, what he's calculating is Sof Mishmara Rishona, the end of the first Mishmar, which is when the donkey brays, Utchilas Mishmara Achrona, and the beginning of the third Mishmeres. So already, as soon as I know, by virtue of hearing the Chamor Noer, the donkey's braying, I know already that we're entering into which Mishmeres? Which number? The second, right? Because the braying is at the end of the first Mishmeres. So I don't need a simon to kick off the second Mishmeres, because immediately after I hear the braying of the donkey, I know I'm in the second Mishmeres. Mm-hmm. But what I don't know is, when does the second Mishmeres end? And therefore, when does the third Mishmeres begin? So that's what we're up to now. Tchilas Mishmara Achrona. We have to know when is the beginning of the third segment. And that is going to be identified with Tinok Yonek, Ve'isha Misaperes and Baila, which means that the baby is nursing and a woman is talking to her husband. Okay, so now we understand the Chamar Noer, which is the end of the first Mishmeres. Hence, the beginning of the second Mishmeres. We know now when is the beginning of the third Mishmeres, and the kickoff of the third Mishmeres is going to be Tidok, Yonek, etc. And now, here's what we need. We need the Chloven. We need the dogs barking. Why? Emtzais di Emtzaisa. What we want to know is, when is the middle of the middle? Meaning the second Mishmeres, which is the middle one, that's sandwiched with the first and the third. And now we want to know when exactly is the middle of that Mishmeres. Now, we never asked when is the middle of the Mishmeres. Until now, we always asked what is the beginning of the Mishmeres, when is the end of the Mishmeres. But for the first time, we want to know, we're curious about the middle of a Mishmeres. Why is it that we need a simon for the middle of the middle Mishmeres, and only for the middle of the middle Mishmeres? That's a very perplexing idea.
Well, that's Chatzot, right?
Oh, maybe it's Chatzot. So excellent. So you're already a step ahead of me. I was hoping to drop this this surprise on you, but you already guessed it on your own.
The middle of the second one is 6 hours. If there's three, each is 4 hours. Halfway through the second is 6 hours.
Because three times four is 12. So
right, because if you divide the night into three equal parts, each part is a third of four of 12, which means 4 hours.
On a perfect night.
So you get on a perfect night, then you get the 4 hours. Now you're entering into the next 4 hours. The middle of the 12-hour night is going to be the end of the sixth hour. That's going to be midnight, and we want to know how to identify midnight. And the answer is when we hear the dogs barking. So the dogs are barking at midnight. And if you go back to our Mishnah, if you remember, the Chachamim are of the opinion that the latest time for Kriyat Shema is going to be at midnight. Now, it's quite possible that Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you could read Kriyat Shema even after the fourth hour for another 2 hours until midnight, the end of the sixth hour. However, he wants to make sure that we're not going to dilly-dally and delay and postpone our Kriyat Shema, because we're playing with fire over here. We can fall asleep, we can get distracted. So therefore he wants you to, you know, as soon as the first Mishmeres ends and you're hearing the donkeys, make sure that you recite Kriyat Shema at that moment. You know, the donkeys braying should be an alarm, a bell that rings in your ear and wakes you up to recite Kriyat Shema. Mm-hmm. And at this point, you may still have a buffer zone of another 2 hours, possibly, but we're not going to wait for that. So we're going to insist that you recite Kriyat Shema no later than the end of the fourth hour. Do you remember the story in our Mishnah when the Talmidim came back? The Talmidim of who was it? Rav Gamliel, right? No, did his I get
son.
That wrong?
It was his son, yeah, it is Talmidim.
Let's just read the Mishnah again. Maisa. Who was it? Was Rav Gamliel? Let's see if I'm right. Just 1 second. Yeah. It was the children of Rav Gamliel. So they came back and they, you know, it was already after midnight, and Rav Gamliel said to them, you know what, you can still read Kriyat Shema. Whenever the Chachamim say that you have to finish Kriyat Shema before that at midnight, it's only Lahachikas Adam and Aver, you know, to make sure that you don't get into that danger zone. Okay. Now, you mentioned before the Beis HaMikdash. And here I have a footnote. This is not part of our official study today, but I just want to mention to you that these three watches of the night, three segments of the night, correspond to different parts of the Avodah, the service in the Beis HaMikdash. I'll give you a few examples. Every day there was what's called Trumas Hadeshen. Now, Trumas Hadeshen means that the ashes that were left overnight on the Mizbeach from the various Korbanot, they had to be cleaned out. And normally, on a regular weekday, that pile of ashes would be cleaned out at the beginning of the third Mishmeres. Okay, that would be 2 hours after you heard the dogs bark, right? Or, if you will, when you heard the sound of the Tinok who's pulling on his mother because he wants the nurse. That's when they did the Trumas Hadeshen. That's called Tchilas Ashmora Ashlish. It's the beginning of the third Ashmora. However, one day of the year, they had to get clear off the Deshen earlier than that, and that was on the night of Yom Kippur. On the night of Yom Kippur, because of the very heavy workload of Yom Kippur, they wanted to start the Trumas Hadeshen earlier. So that was at Chatzot. However, in the case of the Regalim, of the three holidays, then they would do the Trumas Hadeshen at the end of the first Mishmora. And I'll read to you just one or two lines here in the Hebrew. He says, "V'kasher nizkar Kodesh Baruch Hu biotam zmanim shayu meshamshim lefanav b'migdash is ein simcha lefanav." And then he was misabel on the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. So that it's interesting that these three time periods mark three different times during the year when they did the Trumas Hadeshen, whether it was at the beginning of the third Ashmor in the case of a weekday, a regular ordinary weekday, whether it was in the middle of the night, Chatzos, in the case of Yom Kippur, whether it was at the beginning of the, or I should say at the end of the first Mishmeres in the case of Regalim, of the three holidays. And at those points, God in heaven reminds himself, so to speak, of the Avoda that was gone, that once existed and no longer exists. And that's when he let out his roar, his shagah, which is, as we said before, was an expression of his grief and his mourning. Okay, that was just a side commentary. All right. What are the next two words in the Gemara? just to make sure we're all on the same page. It's not good, fellas, you have to keep a finger on the place. The next two words should say V'ibayis Ema. Can you find that? Right after we did the Emtza East, the Emtza Isa, right? The dogs are barking in the middle of the middle one. V'ibayis Ema. And if you would like, I will tell you. Ema means I will tell you. Like Nemo, we will say. There are various conjugations of the word to say or to speak. One of them is Ema, we will say. And V'ibayis means, and if you would like. Whenever you see the phrase V'ibayit Ema, again, you can check Frank's dictionary. I think, Sam, you have a copy of that. Yeah. I hope you do. Of course, I gave that to you as a precious gift. I'm just joking. Okay.
No, I do have it.
Okay, yeah. So that, so you'll find in that dictionary, V'ibayit Ema means, and if you'd like, I can give you another answer. What that means is, the Gemara has two Lashonos. Two Lashonos means two versions. The first version we finished, and we understand these three different simonim and what they indicate. And now we're up to a second version, another possible alternative way of interpreting the brisa of Rabbi Eliezer. That's called V'ibayis Ema. Kulhu, all of these simonim. Kulhu means Lashon Kol, all of them. Sof, the end of Mishmaros, of the three Mishmaros Kachoshim. So these three simanim indicate the end of each one of the Mishmaros. Now, my friends, what's going to be the problem here?
The last one,
right? Because the last one we said is identified with daybreak, so we don't need a siman. The chitem, and if you'll ask, or literally if you'll say, but whenever it says v'chitema, it implies a question, but it also implies an answer, so to speak. And if you will ask, meaning I have an answer already prepared in my back pocket, achrona lo tzarich, I don't need a simon for the end of the third mishmeres, because that's the beginning of daylight. So l'may nafkemina. Okay, now here we have to spend a minute or two on l'may nafkemina. L'may nafkemina means, what's the need for this? So usually, not in this particular case, but what's the need for this means, when you have two opinions, there's a debate, then we always ask, L'may nafkemina? Why do I have to know these two opinions? It's a theoretical argument, but it has no practical difference, no, you know, practical implications.
What's the translation of the word nafka?
Nafka is to come out. Mina, from it. Lemai, what comes out from it. Meaning, well, why do you have to bother with this? Why do you have to give me a simon for the third mishmeres? What do I gain by that? Lemai nafkamina, what comes out of that? You know, give me some practical difference. I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase, the lawyers use this phrase. What? How does it cut ice? Have you ever heard that phrase? How does it cut ice? Meaning, the lawyers want to know what difference it makes. Give me a practical implication or repercussion. So the answer is limikri. Now notice the word limikri. If you could take apart in its shoresh, in its root, you could already begin to understand what does limikri mean. Right? Take the kuf and the resh. Alright? Kuf resh, and if you add either an aleph at the end, which means a verse, or a hey at the end, means to read or to recite. Limikri, to recite Kriyat Shema, to recite the morning Kriyat Shema. In other words, it's not always easy to know whether it is daybreak or not. Supposing, for example, you're in a locked room, I don't mean locked, but a closed room, and there are no windows to the room. It's pitch black in the room. They didn't have watches in those days. So how is he going to know that it's the beginning of daybreak? It's after daybreak that he could recite the morning Kriyat Shema.
Does dog need a bite, like the closed room?
Leman de Gani, for someone who's sleeping. Gani means to sleep. Bibayas, in a home. Ofel. Ofel means it's dark. V'lo yadad, he doesn't know zman kriyat shma, the time for shacharis. When is the time for the morning shacharis? He's literally in the dark and figuratively in the dark. Amos, when is the time for Kriyat Shema? You remember that our parak is called Me'emosai. From when can you read the Kriyat Shema at night? Here we're asking about the Kriyat Shema in the morning, Me'emos. He's in a bias ofel. He's in a house that's pitch dark. He has no clue as to whether or not it's already the end of the third Mishmeres, and therefore it's daybreak, and he can now recite Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris. So what does he do? He tries to listen carefully for this simon. Kevon, as soon as, Kevon means as soon as, the Isha, woman, misaperes im baila, she speaks to her husband, so maybe she spoke a little too loud, so he overheard it, or tinok yonek mishtei imo, or the baby is nursing from its mother. At that point, he can identify, based on these simonim, the end of the third Mishmeres. His lekum velikre, he stands up, lekum in lashon kima, which is a Hebrew word to stand up, velikre, and he reads, and he recites Kriyat Shema. In other words, if he's worried that maybe it's too early for Kriyat Shema, once he hears these simonim, he automatically knows that it's the end of the third segment of the night, and therefore he's able to identify daybreak even in the darkness of his room and recite Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris.
Does he have to wait till Misha hear the Chatilah?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the Gemara that was on the previous Amud Daf Beis has a number of different opinions as to when is the earliest time for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis, and also the earliest time for Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris. Actually, in my Gemara, he's got this gigantic chart here. I'll just show you what it looks like. A table in which he summarizes all the various opinions, which of course I'm not finding right now. Alright, anyway, I'll find it as we go along. And he has a summary of all the various opinions. But our sugya of Rabbi Eliezer, again, Rabbi Eliezer, keep in mind, is a Tana. So Rabbi Eliezer is not committed to any other opinion. So he has his own unique opinion. And he may... Oh, here it is. This is an entire chart of all the different opinions about when you can start Kriyat Shema and so forth. In any event, this is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, we don't have too much time, but I would like to learn with you for 5 minutes the next piece of Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Shmuel, said Mishmei in the name of Rav. Shalosh Mishmaras Havi Halayla. The night is divided up into three segments. This reflects what we saw in the Brisa of Rabbi Eliezer. I'll call Mishmar u Mishmar.
Sorry, is Rav the Tana?
No. Rav is a first generation Amora.
Okay.
I'll call Mishmar u Mishmar. Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shoei ka'ari. He's crying out. What is he crying out? V'omer, and he declares, Oi, woe labonim, to my children. This is a reference to the people of Israel. Sheba'avonoseihem, as a result of their sins, Hichravti, I have destroyed Es Basi, my Beit HaMikdash, Visarafti Es Heichali, the Heichal is the holiest part of the Beit HaMikdash. That's where they had the inner Mizbeach, that's where they had the Lechem HaPonim, this, and that's where the menorah, the candelabra was. These were all in the Heichal. And I have burnt my Heichal. Why? Because of their sins. V'iglesim lebein umos ha'olam, and I have scattered them in the exiles of the world, the nations of the world. This, according to Rav, is the three-part content or meaning of the three shagot. It's possible, I can't vouch for this, that Rav is explaining each one of the three shagot respectively. The first shagah is Oyla Bonim Shavonoseyem Hichrafti Es Beisi. The second shagah is Sorafti Es Heicholi. And the third is Iglesi Lebeina Umos Olam. I've sent them into exile, into the diaspora. Now, it could be that this is in ascending order, going what we call Minakal, the light one, El Achomor, to the more severe one. And the more severe punishment and loss for the Jewish nation is that they've been scattered and spread throughout the nations of the world. Now, even though there's a purpose to exile, there's a constructive, positive purpose, we're meant to have an impact on the nations of the world, but nevertheless, it's a great tragedy for us, because as long as we're not here in the land, we're subject to the whims and whatever the decisions are of the nations of the world, and they can come into our synagogues and kill us. They can say all sorts of anti-Semitic words against us and so forth and so on. There's one country, I don't know if you know this, in Europe, where you're not allowed to slaughter an animal.
Denmark, yeah.
I think it's in Belgium, maybe also in Denmark too, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me in Scandinavia. Yeah, that's typical. And this goes on and on and on. I think I mentioned to you on more than one occasion that my father came from Lithuania, and he told me that in his youth, if a guy wanted to do away with a Jew, there was no recourse. I mean, it was just Jewish blood was hefker. This is my father. I'm not talking about my grandfather. I'm talking about my father and what he saw. And my father-in-law, he's alive, not so well, but he's alive. He also has a very similar story in his part of Poland about what the Goyim were doing to the Jews. So if you read the literature, I don't have to tell you the anti-Semitism and the subjugation of the Jew. This is perhaps the most severe of all the shagot, of all the lamentations of the Almighty during the course of every single night. Now the next piece of Gemara, which again, if we have time, and Mirz Hashem next week, I don't know what your schedule is. Maybe I don't know when your official semester ends, but you'll let me know. The next piece of Gemara is a famous story about Rabbi Yossi, who actually, he was one of the Tanoim. He went into a churva. Churva means a dilapidated house. The Gemara is going to say later on he shouldn't have done so for many, many different reasons. And he heard the voice of Eliyahu HaNavi inside this churva. And the Gemara now is developing an overall picture about various shagot, various divine roars and cries, and what is the content or the substance of those cries. Sometimes the cries come from the Almighty Himself, and it's up in Shemayim, up in the Rakia. Sometimes you can even hear God's voice through a Navi, through a prophet, like in this case of Eliyahu. The Pella here, what's amazing, is that Rabbi Yossi is a Tana. The Tanoim lived way after the termination, the end of Nevuah, of prophecy. And that's one question we'll have to address. How is it possible that Rabbi Yossi was able to receive a prophecy from Eliyahu HaNavi at that time?
Well, it's not the same type of prophecy as was in the time of his Nikosh. It's not like a direct voice from heaven. It's just it's Navi coming to him. It's like a second hand.
It's like a Bat Nevuah, almost.
I don't know, maybe. I don't know. I'm not that advanced here in the sugya. Honestly, what I prepared for today was up until this point. I was just giving you a little bit of coming, a preview of coming attractions.
Is it trying to clarify whether it's actually a legitimate voice? Because usually, like, a dilapidated house is also a dwelling, at least according to the Talmud, like a dwelling place for Shin Dalai.
Shaden, exactly. Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
so the parallel is between like Shmuel and Navi. And
but the only thing is, the reason why we identify this voice that Rabbi Yossi heard in the churva as the genuine real thing, and it's genuinely Eliyahu's voice, is because Rabbi Yossi comes out of the churva and he teaches three different halachas. And all these halachas, you should know, are codified in our halacha, in our law. Mm. Apparently, he really did hear a genuine voice. And God willing, we'll pick that up next week.
Rabbi, is there a halakha issur nowadays not to enter ruins?
Not to enter ruins, yes, for sure. Because what's going to happen is, Eliyahu HaNavi, he's going to get very, very upset with Rabbi Yossi, and he's going to say to him, "You had no right to go into the churva." Rabbi Yossi himself is going to try to defend himself. Mm-hmm. But again, this is futuristic. I don't know if you'll be here next week, but what we accomplished this week is that we divide up the night into three mishmaros. We proved conclusively that Rabbi Eliezer accepts that we divide up the night into three mishmaros. We spoke about the three shagot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We spoke about the three simonim, the donkey and the dogs and the baby and so forth, and what is the significance of these simonim. It couldn't be the beginning, it couldn't be the end, because that we have. It's going to be the end of the first mishmaros, it's going to be the end of the third mishmaros, and that's relevant to Kriyat Shema, as we said, and then the midnight, which is the emtsoi sheba emtsois. And basically what we conclude is that Rabbi Eliezer told us two dinim. On the one hand, he answered the question, when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis? But for that he could have said Shalosh Shos. But he wanted to teach us another idea, and that is that the night is divided up into three mishmaros, and the first mishmar ends, and when the first mishmar ends after 4 hours, that's the point in which there's a transition up in the watches of heavens, and that's the end of the time for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis. Okay then? So we'll stop here. I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great week, and let me know what your schedule